This is Matty, and this is episode 6 of the Road to Change podcast, the 10,000 mile walk to stop the silence and stop child sexual abuse. This week I'm still in Romania, and with me in Yvonne is Stego.
As always.
And Mojo.
Yeah, I'm still here.
So how are you doing, boys? Are you having fun?
Yeah.
Oh, so much more fun now.
Why? What's changed?
Sun. We got like between 18 and 20 degrees.
Yeah,
and
it's like really warm.
Proper sun.
Which is lovely for you, but I'm getting really horrendous tan lines at the moment.
Yeah. Really bad. Yeah.
I had to walk without my hat on because I was getting a white line across the top of my head. But yeah, so apparently you said it's snowing right now today in where your gran is.
Yeah, in my hometown. So.
And it's great. I mean, it's wonderful in a sense because obviously we're in spring, but I'd planned for it to be snowing right now. So what we're, you know. I thought I would be walking 30 kilometres a day, and at the moment I'm walking nearer 60, which is just because the weather's so bizarrely good. But so how are you feeling about Romania? This is our third week in the country.
Well, when we entered the mountains here, and it's beautiful, but I think
I like it a lot better than I was at first. Mm. It was a bit too. There wasn't much open spaces, it was just kind of. Barriers down the side,
yeah,
of the roads and the hills.
Claustrophobic when you were driving.
Yeah. And the drivers are maniacs.
Oh yeah,
trucks overtaking you, two trucks overtaking you, cars coming the other way, and then it just feels a bit dodgy. But since we reached these proper mountains, it's opened up.
Yeah,
there's a nice big river. Spring places to walk.
I really think it must be a Romanian custom to go a drive every time you need to phone someone. Because every time I look at a driver, even if it's a massive truck, they're on their phone. And I don't know if it's not illegal here or if these are just people passing through the country because they're haulage drivers, but it's terrifying for me because, you know, I'm at the side of a narrow road and they are technically in charge of my life and they're on their phone chatting away. I'm not exaggerating when it's like nearly every driver is on their phone, and it's kind of surreal to watch. But I've had the best week. I think I've walked 180 miles since the last podcast.
Yeah, you've done really good.
And I've had problems with my knee. And the Robbie Fleming, who's over in America, he was giving me advice. My brother Roddy, who's a paramedic, he was giving me advice. And I've been taking care of myself, but at the same time, I've just kind of been cracking on because it's a massive, massive country.
It's huge, yeah.
It's the biggest country, I think, obviously in Eastern Europe, but it might be. I'm not sure size wise. It might be the biggest country that I passed through until Spain, I think, on the road to change. And So my kind of feeling is just to keep going, just because it is so big, I want to just keep on moving. Yeah. And we will get there. We've got until the 23rd to arrive there, but I think we're going to get there sooner.
Yeah, is it 15th, 16th today?
I've no idea.
I don't
know what day it is.
No, we've got, walking. I think, estimated 4 days till we get there.
Yeah, we should be there.
15th.
So we'll be there in 4 days, which is 4 days early. Mm-hmm. Oh well, what can I do about that?
And we had 2 days off at your birthday, so
yeah that's right. Good. Yeah, so I mean, so, but that's the thing. I plan extra days in case there are unforeseen problems, because you know the whole point of this walk is to raise awareness of child sexual abuse, and we're reaching out to governments, and sometimes to set up a meeting with the government, they want advance notice. So that's why we plan for the walk, taking into account that and there might be delays, so that if I do get delayed, it doesn't affect the time that I always arrive in the site. So, some people literally said to me it couldn't be done, but this will be the 18th city that I've arrived at on time, and I'm pretty chuffed about that. But it's not thanks to me, it's thanks to you guys, because yous are on the road doing all the grafting. I just walk all day and avoid scary dogs. So, what have yous been doing this week?
Well, we've been cleaning out a bit more, but it's not much that's left to be done here now.
Yeah, there's not a lot more we can do.
No.
Yeah.
Just limited for space.
There's only so much cleaning that wee van can do.
I still want to sort out the window blinds.
Yeah, we need to do that.
Window blinds? I know, see, Stego has. He's very excited because the sun's finally back.
Yeah.
Me and Mojo remember the summer. when Yvonne literally turns into an oven, when the sun is. The inside of one becomes so unbearably hot.
Yeah, we felt that today when we were driving. We had to roll down the windows because it was getting too hot in the front.
But
not too hot, but
there's there's no movement of air inside of one. She's a tin box, so she becomes
literally
an oven.
Two vents now. So.
We got two.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter when there's no wind. I mean, it's okay if you're driving around, but is we're going to have to invest in some sort of heater.
Yeah.
Of some description.
Heater.
Not heater.
Yeah, sure. No, let's go for that.
What's that thing? Fan. A fan? Yeah. That's what it is. Yeah. See, I've walked 30 miles today. My head's a bit somewhere else.
Yeah.
But, yeah. It's been...
yeah, so we also bend our heater. So we haven't used that for like a week now.
We bought a heater in Lithuania because we desperately, desperately needed one. And it was like -5 in the van during the night. And we've finally gotten rid of it. So I'm quite excited about that.
Yeah, me too.
Although it was pretty cold this morning.
Yeah.
It was,
there's been no clouds, so it's been really cold at night.
There was frost on the grass this morning.
It was going to snow in the mountains tonight, so...
Well, that's the thing, it's snow-capped mountains. Yeah, like, you look up on the hills and there's snow, and it's roasting down at the bottom. I'm literally sunburnt, my lips are falling apart, I look like an old fisherman.
Your hands, they look lovely.
I have a stripe across my hands because I wear these walking grips, and I literally have kind of half and half burnt hands. It's really strange. I'll post a picture on Facebook so you can see what we're talking about. But yeah, so, what I was going to say, this week on the podcast, I took the opportunity to interview Dr. Pamela Pine, who's the founder and CEO of Stop the Silence, Stop Child Sexual Abuse. Pam's based over in DC, so later on we'll kind of, you'll hear the interview that I had with her, which we did online, but hopefully the audio was pretty good. But me and Mojo in the past few weeks have been going back and talking about the road to change, the early days, you know, the early days, it was a few months ago. But I think we got to Paris, didn't we? We talked about last week, we were talking about Paris.
Yeah.
But the next stage was the city number three, was Luxembourg.
Yeah.
But do you remember the the nightmare it was trying to get from Paris to Luxembourg?
Yeah.
There was the the walking part was going fine, but Mojo was only supposed to be the driver until Luxembourg, and then Amanda was going to come out and drive. But Amanda got held up indefinitely, so Mojo was then going to be the driver for, we didn't know how long it was going to be. So he'd booked a flight home from Luxembourg, which we'd booked and paid for the flight, so we had to get there. But then Yvonne broke down.
Yeah.
What was the name of that town?
Reims.
Yeah, well, it's called Reims in the map, but I think it's Reims or something. If you ask people where, I'll be like, Reims. We stopped in what we thought was a... a safe place to park.
Yeah, it was camping for, or it was parking spaces for campers and stuff.
Yeah.
This one was advertised as.
It was advertised as that, but it wasn't that, because what it revealed itself to be was a cruising area for kind of dodgy gay men. And what happened was the starter motor, we didn't realise that's what got on the starter motor. We parked the van, she was working fine, and then she wouldn't start again. And then we started to notice that these men were going past the windows, and we were sitting there and they were going past, and the same guys were passing like, you know, 2 or 3 times an hour. So we realised they were just going up and down, because we're next to a canal, they were just walking up and down constantly. And once I realised what was happening, we were actually in this, we started calling it the bum hole, because we were stuck in the bum hole.
Stuck for 2 days,
weren't we? It was 3 days.
First we thought it was diesel.
Yeah,
we tried everything. So we filled up with diesel, and then the battery was low, so we ran the generator to charge up the battery. And it took a good few hours to do that, and then it wouldn't start, because basically the starter motor was failing.
Yeah.
So on the third day, wasn't it?
The third day.
We spoke to Eddie, and he said there was a garage close by, within a mile.
That's right, we just started walking.
Walked up to the garage, and they said they would come and give us a jump start. And they did that. And it didn't start.
It didn't.
And he was whacking the starter motor of a pole.
That's right.
And it still didn't start. So he gave us a tow up to their garage.
That's right. He charged us €50 to give him a tow at the garage. That's what it was. And the van didn't start. And then, they wanted the charges for a new starter motor?
In the showroom, the woman printed out a receipt and she was translating.
Aye.
Or he was translating for her.
Aye.
And they passed you the sheet, and it was €330 for the starter motor, and €200 euros labour.
Aye. It's €500 to get us on the road again.
And you said, fuck. And then they translated, fuck.
I didn't know the French for fuck.
So it was going to be €550 to get the car back, or to get a one back on the road.
But that's the thing, because I knew that I planned how many days it was going to take to get to Luxembourg, but the problem was this time, obviously I needed to be there because we had meetings and we had to change things happening, but you had your flight home booked,
yeah,
so
right.
The longer this was taking, the longer we were stuck in Reims, you know, because I can't walk anywhere unless Yvonne can follow me, because we need somewhere to sleep after, you know, 40, 50 kilometres. So I was getting more and more freaked out and more tense.
Yeah, you just go quiet when you're stressed. You just go quiet. I don't know. I spoke to Eddie and he was like, we can get them online for £44.
Yeah.
So we knew 300 was a rip-off.
Yeah.
Plus, I went and took the starter motor out so we could show it to people.
Yeah.
So we knew that the labour, 200 euros labour, was a rip-off as well. So we went back. I remember I stripped took it apart and cleaned it up.
No idea how you know how to do these things.
I thought that's the only way we're going to get it. If we can't buy one, because we got another quote and that was 320, we had to wait 2 days. Well, we'll take it apart. If it doesn't work,
yeah,
you start walking and I'll wait till that 2 days to get the other one.
Yeah, I was going to carry a tent and just sleep.
Yeah. That would have been a nightmare.
The road must go on, do you know what I mean? It's funny though, Mojo. There's no limit to the practical talents you have. I mean that's the thing. Like a starter motor's not working, Mojo takes it apart, cleans it, puts it back together, and then it is working.
That was exciting when it started.
And after 3 days, that's the thing. Like 3 days of sitting in this car park with these guys constantly looking in the window and me freaking out about running out of time in this flight and like, oh, I need to get moving and stuff. It was so intense. And then the van finally started. It was just, oh man, it was euphoric.
We get back on the road.
And I think that was the first time I did 108 miles in 3 days.
Yeah.
Because I was like, right, was Nego.
My birthday, wasn't it? The day before?
It was the day after, because your birthday was the day that I walked from France, a place called Montmédy, and then I walked, because Belgium's a weird shape, I walked into Belgium, out of Belgium and into Luxembourg in one day. It was like 50 kilometres, 50-something kilometres I walked. And I was just really excited to walk through three countries in one day. And it was great because it was euro the whole way. There was no messing around with currency or anything. But that was the 27th of June, so it was your birthday, Mojo.
Yeah.
And because Mojo is stuck in the van and it's been quite an intense week, I wanted to make his birthday special. So I remember I bought a birthday card in France, which I had no idea what it said. I'm pretty sure it was a birthday card. And then when I got into Belgium, I bought, what was it, a Belgian waffle?
Yeah, Belgian waffle, Belgian chocolate. And 2 slices of cake.
I couldn't find a birthday cake, but I found a shop that sold slices of cake. So then I walked 5 miles holding a cake box, like 5 miles up the side of the road holding this cake. Yeah, so that was Mojo's birthday.
That was nice.
But that's where, I mean, that day I remember being amazed by the euro at that point and realising that this is the point of it. You can go to different countries and spend the same money. And loads of people are against the euro. And I think, actually, since we were in Latvia, they've now changed the euro, because it was lats when we were
there. Yeah, they changed that on the 1st of January, or February.
So, I think the Road to Change is a kind of European Union-based project, and I'm quite in favour of it, of European Union, obviously, and all the benefits of it. I do think, though, that there's ups and downs to it, but that was a crazy time. So, smashing. Well, I tell you what, we'll move over now and we'll hear the interview I did earlier this week with Dr. Pam Lapine.
So, for the benefit of people listening, Pam, who are you and where are you from?
Well, professionally, my name is Dr. Pamela Pine, and I'm the founder and CEO of Stop the Silence, Stop Child Sexual Abuse. I'm sitting outside of Washington, D.C. in Maryland in our offices to the kind of northeast of Washington, D.C. And my background basically is international public health and public health communication, but I got pretty swept away by this issue, learning about it, starting about 14 years ago.
Well, that's my next question. How did you get involved in this issue?
Well, yeah, I can go. So I'll answer that now, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So how did I get involved with this issue? So, well, I was sitting in an office in Washington, D.C. at the organization where I was working at the time. It was January of 2000. And I got some information across my computer screen, which is the norm for everybody who is working pretty much anywhere. and it contained information about child sexual abuse. Actually, it was a call for proposals on interpersonal violence. And it included a call for proposals on bullying and elder abuse and domestic violence and child abuse. And under the child abuse area, there were three, which is now four, areas of focus on child abuse, which is psychological sexual act. And one of them, my sister, Amy Pine, who is a therapist out in California. And I called her up and I said, you know, I just got some information about interest in gearing a program on child sexual abuse. And so I was wondering if her organization and the organization I was working for wanted to see whether collaboration was possible. And so we started working on developing programming, and I ended up writing focus for their organization, having me as a consultant to them on a program that was a comprehensive programming addressing child sexual abuse prevention and mitigation. And it was to be carried out, and which ended up being carried out because we got the grant, in Santa Cruz, California, with focus on Latino populations, because basically really nothing was being done for them out that way. So that's how it all began.
Cool. And so for people listening to this, they might not know, how did you and I become colleagues?
Well, it was 2008, and you wrote to me, and you asked me to review a play. You said that you had been online looking at information about child sexual abuse, and you were inspired to write a play as a result of viewing the information on my organization. What you told me afterwards, actually, or maybe then, I can't remember, was that you were really, really taken with the name Stop the Silence, because that to you was what was allowing it to continue, was the silence. So you wrote this play and you sent it to me to review, and I reviewed it. And of course, it was brilliant. and you know, you asked me to make some comments. So I made some comments and I sent it back. And I think you tweaked it at that point. And then there was some kind of back and forth between us for a while. And you ended up raising the funds to have it produced and performed in Glasgow. And by that summer, I mean, it was really fast. By that summer, 2008, I had asked whether you would be interested in bringing it to the United States. And you were, you know, gung-ho, as you always are, gung-ho for everything. And so I went to one of the federal offices here, Health and Human Services, and also got a matching grant from a corporate group, Adam and Partners Investment Advisors in New York City. And after you performed in Glasgow, we went on tour in 2011 to San Francisco and Chicago and Washington, D.C. And boy, you know, whole lot of history. I mean, just an incredible amount of really wonderful, wonderful history. The play, of course, ended up going to New York City off Broadway in 2012, with support from Creative Scotland. And you know, there's been an amazing amount of collaboration. Very, very creative. You know, it hasn't always been easy stuff. I mean, it's not easy to get the money for this stuff. And the logistics on that tour in 2011 and to bring it to off Broadway were pretty intense. But it has been an amazing, amazing adventure, and it continues, you know, with the model programming that I designed and that we've wrapped around this. It's now going into universities in the United States with the model programming that focuses on education and training and all that kind of stuff, while it's also being the film now. You know, your brother Ed Smith, producer and director, also brilliant, brilliant, adaptation, I don't know if that's the right word, but basically filming of To Kill a Kelpie, it now allows us all to bring it to audiences literally all over the world, whether it's Europe, the United States, or anywhere else. I mean, it's great stuff. It's really great stuff.
I mean, if you think back, you and I were coming at it from, I was, you know, and I guess an artist. I don't like that word, but I was an actor and a playwright, and I wrote this piece, and I came from the kind of professional theatre world, and you were obviously very experienced and established in the, was it international public health communication world, which are very different entities to, and you know, you kind of made the leap from that to coming into being a theatre producer. I can imagine that must have been quite a headache, really, because it's hard enough for people who've been doing it.
It was a lot. I mean, I think we both learned an incredible amount about each other's worlds and benefited in absolutely incredible and untold ways. Sorry, I think I cut you off. What was the question?
Well, the next, I was thinking about that. I mean, you know this more than anyone, but it's so hard to raise money for sexual abuse specifically, because those words seem to be repellent when it comes to people getting involved in the issue. But besides that, what do you find is the hardest thing to address child sexual abuse internationally? What's the hardest thing besides raising money to do it?
Well, you know, the issue of people being able to speak about it and address it has changed. I mean, I've watched a sea change. When I first started this in 2000 and then incorporated, we got our first grant in 2002, where I was passing money through other people because we didn't even have an organization yet, and it was incorporated in 2004. I've watched people literally all over the world change with regard to their orientation and ability to listen to information about it and just even say the words. When I first started, people couldn't get the words out of their mouth. And when I said child sexual abuse, they lowered their voice. Oh, it doesn't happen anymore. It doesn't happen anymore. I now call and I say, hello, I'm calling from Stop the Silence, Stop Child Sexual Abuse, and I'm looking for so-and-so. And they say, oh, okay, hold on a minute. You know, it's really changed. The radio announcements about it have changed. People speaking about it on the TV, how they speak about it and what they're willing to say has changed. It's changed a lot. But the hardest thing, I think, at this point, besides the money, because that is the hardest thing, the hardest thing, I think, at this point is probably the toll that it takes on us all, perhaps. You know, it's a tough one. I mean, we listen to stories about children and from survivors and not being able to do more, which frankly comes back to the money, but the frustration is not being able to do more, I think, is the hardest thing for me and the most frustrating thing for me. Because as we all know, you know, this is an issue that is all over the world, more or less in some places, but pretty severe in most of the world. And the numbers of people who are affected and hurt are tremendous, and that frustrates the hell out of me. I guess that's what I would say is the hardest thing. You know, putting all of this together, whether it's the Race to Stop the Silence or a tour of To Kill a Kelpie across the U.S. or bringing it to Off-Broadway or The Road to Change, which is, oh my gosh, what an incredible monumental effort. All of that, I mean, the moving parts of all of this stuff is incredible, but we can do that. We know how to do it. We're doing it, but we want it bigger. We want it more. We want to affect people all over the world. So yeah, I guess that's my biggest frustration. That's the hardest part for me.
Okay. Well, what I asked Amanda and Stig in these interviews was, how, if at all, has the Road to Change changed you?
Well, I guess the Road to Change has changed my perception of what's possible, how and when. I know that we as a group and other people out there who have been helping and who want to help can change the world. I mean, that's what you and I have been talking about for years. Mm-hmm. We want to change the world. And so watching The Road to Change has given me more confidence that the world can be changed. We just need more people and more resources, but it's possible and it can happen. And we're all making it happen a little bit more. And so, I guess it's given me the confidence, you know, that we can do this in various ways, in various places, all over the world, I guess.
Cool. And just to pick up on what you said earlier about the toll it takes on you, which, you know, I do understand that. And you've been doing this a lot longer than I have. So what keeps you doing this work?
I want to change the world. you and I have talked on numerous occasions about how hard, in fact, it is. It can be. And also about the impact that we've had on people's lives, which is more than important and has been shown over and over and over again. So there are times, as you and I have talked, there are times that you say, boy, can I keep doing this? Can I keep doing this? And then something incredible happens and someone or many people or some kind of impact is made and you know, the world turns a little bit more and we see the possibilities and we know the impact that it's having and we say, okay, we can do it for another day. You know, we can do it for another week. We can do it for another month. We can do it another year. You know, we can make a change. We can make a change in this world. And it's mostly that and it's the challenge and the belief, the challenge of doing it and the belief that it can happen. And I want to see that happen. I want to see that happen all over the world.
Okay. Well, we'll get there. So, yeah. Well, I appreciate you're possibly the busiest person I know in my life. So thank you for your time and speaking to us on the podcast. And if you get any
time, Mr. McBarish.
Yeah, we'll have you back at some point down the road in one of the other countries, I'm sure at some point. So till then, thanks very much, Pam. I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
That was Dr. Pamela Pine, or as I call her, Wee Pam. She's the boss, kind of the boss, obviously the boss of Stop the Silence, Stop Child Sexual Abuse, but also she's the project coordinator of the Road to Change, and we love her support and everything she does for us and for the world in general. So, guys, we need to wrap this up, but have we got a new luck of the week this week?
Yeah, this is Mojo's turn.
Mojo, what'd you do?
Yeah.
Wow. Since the space was limited, because I brought you so many nice things, I had two t-shirts with me, and three pairs of boxers, which I all needed to wash yesterday. And then we went to the supermarket. I don't speak Romanian.
Don't you?
No. So I bought a bottle of something that had a symbol in the back that looked like hand washing. It was obviously bleaching. And it didn't smell like bleach, it smells like kind of flowery and kind of chemically. I thought, yeah, that's fine. So we've got a wee kind of washing machine that Eddie gave us. It's a kind of salad spinner for clothes.
I'm pretty good at that one.
Found that'll be hot water and bleach on top. Left it for half an hour and Stig was excited to get a shot of this thing. I was like, no, wait, you have to wait. Meanwhile, my clothes are slowly seeping out colour. And I looked at the water and it was really dark.
Yeah, we thought it was just dirt.
It was really dirty clothes, oh my god. And I pull out my clothes and they look all tie-dyed.
New luck, Wojo. New luck. So your only pants have been bleached. Yeah. Are they white? Are they?
No, they're orange and black.
Yeah, black. Yeah, yeah. Like orange tie-dye bits. Some t-shirts get tie-dye bits.
Well, there you are. It's the road to change, Mojo. Come back with different pants. So, smashing us. Stig, any final thoughts?
I love the sun. All right? Makes me feel better.
I can tell you're effervescent this week, Stiggle. Yes. Mojo, this will be the last time we hear you on the podcast for a wee while, so...
Unless I come back out to... Yeah. We're going to go back out to Spain, which will be the other side of the summer.
Yeah.
So have a nice summer, everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you want to do a fundraiser for Road to Change and you're in the Scotland area, Mojo, you can give him a shout. He'll help you out if you want to put things together.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've loved it this week, and next week we'll be in Bucharest. And thank you again for listening. The Road to Change is a project. It's organised and supported by Stop the Silence, Stop Child Sexual Abuse, in partnership with the Moira Anderson Foundation. You can find links to all these organisations on our website, roadtochange.eu, and you'll also see a massive shameless donate button, because we have no corporate support. We're walking around Europe trying to raise awareness of child sexual abuse, reaching out to 100 million victims in Europe, but so far no company support us. So we really appreciate every penny you guys donate, and every time you listen to the podcast and share it around. So thank you so much for listening, guys, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.